Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 6, Chapter 1, The History of the Life of Ajamila, Text 31. Vikarshitone tar hridayat Dasi patim ajamilam Yama preshan Vishnu duta Varyam asur ojasa. Vikarshita, snatching, antak ridayat, from within the heart, dasipatim, the husband of the prostitute, ajamilam, ajamila, yama preshyan, the messengers of Yamaraj, Vishnu Duta, the order carriers of Lord Vishnu, Varyam Asu forbade, Ojasa, with resounding voices. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. The order carriers of Yamaraj were snatching the soul from the core of the heart of Ajamila, the husband of the prostitute. But with resounding voices, the messengers of Lord Vishnu, the Vishnu Dutas, forbade them to do so. Please repeat. The order carriers of Yamaraj were snatching the soul from the core of the heart of Ajamila, the husband of the prostitute. But with resounding voices, the messengers of Lord Vishnu, the Vishnu Dutas, forbade them to do so. Purport. A Vaishnav, one who is surrendered to the lotus feet of Lord Vishnu, is always protected by Lord Vishnu's order carriers. Because Ajamila had chanted the holy name of Narayan, the Vishnu Dutas not only immediately arrived on the spot, but also at once ordered the Yamadutas not to touch him. By speaking with resounding voices, the Vishnu Dutas threatened to punish the Yamadutas if they continued trying to snatch Ajamila's soul from his heart. The order carriers of Yamaraj have jurisdiction over all sinful living entities. But the messengers of Lord Vishnu, the Vishnu Dutas, are capable of punishing anyone, including Yamaraj, if he wrongs a Vaishnav. Materialistic scientists do not know where to find the soul within the body with our material instruments. But this verse clearly explains that the soul is within the core of the heart, Hridaya. It is from the heart that the Yamadutas were extracting the soul of Ajamila. Similarly, we learn that the Supersoul Lord Vishnu is also situated within the heart. Ishvara Sarabhutanam Riddyeshe Arjuna Tishtiti. In the Upanishads, it is said that the Supersoul and the individual soul living in the same tree of the body as two friendly birds. The Supersoul is said to be friendly because the Supreme Personality of Godhead is so kind to the original soul that when the original soul transmigrates from one body to another, the Lord goes with him. Furthermore, according to the desire and karmas of the individual soul, the Lord, through the agency of Maya, creates another body for him. The heart of the body is a mechanical arrangement, as the Lord says in the Bhagavad Gita. Ishvara sarabhutanam ridesha arjuna tishtati brahmayan sarabhutani yantrarudani maya. Supreme Lord is situated in everyone's heart, O Arjuna, and is directing the wanderings of all living entities who are seated as on a machine made of the material energy. Yantra means a machine such as an automobile. The driver of the machine of the body is the individual soul, who is also its director or proprietor. But the supreme proprietor is the supreme personality of Godhead. One's body is created through the agency of Maya, Karmana, Daiva, Naitrena. According to one's activities in this life, another vehicle is created, again under the supervision of Daivi Maya, Daivi Yesha Gunamayi, Mama Maya Dharatiya. At the appropriate time, one's next body is immediately chosen, and both the individual soul and the super soul transfer to that particular bodily machine. This is the process of transmigration. During transmigration from one body to another, the soul is taken away by the order carriers of Yamaraj and put into a particular type of hellish life, Naraka, in order to become accustomed to the condition in which he will live in his next body. Vikarshitontar ridaya dashipatim ajamilam yama preshtyan vishnuduta varyan asvar ojasa. The order carriers of Yamaraj was snatching the soul from the core of the heart of Ajamila, the husband of the prostitute. But with resounding voices, the messengers of Lord Vishnu, the Vishnu Dutas, obeyed them to do so. Process of transmigration from one body to another is explained here. And that's, and Prabhupada quotes from Bhagavad Gita, which is the basic principles of how everything works. In the 15th chapter, Krishna explains that Mamaivangso Jivaloke Jivabhuta Sanatanam Manakshastran Indriyani Prakriti Stani Karshiti. The living entity in this material world are all my fragmental parts, and they are all eternal. But due to conditioned life, they are struggling very hard with the six senses, which include the mind. As soon as one gets a material body, then a struggle ensues. A struggle principally to survive. Everyone's trying to do what's ever necessary so our gross body survives. And we use our intelligence in so many different ways in order to satisfy our gross and subtle bodies. And as we all know, at the end we die anyhow. But anyhow, if we have a good fight, then they give us a bigger gravestone. Otherwise, no one gets anything from the fight except for the fact of fighting. Because no one ever comes out victorious. Everyone is ultimately vanquished by time. Arjuna asked Krishna that, my dear Krishna, that I can see that you have this horrible feature called the universal form. That what is the purpose of the whole thing? What is it? Tasma Twami teach the Yashola Basva Jidva Shatrambushvara Jan Sramidan Mayavatam Niyatam Purvameva. That's Krishna's answer. Agyakime Kobavan Ugrupo. Namosti te deva vra prasida, vikatum ichami vantamadyam nehi prajanami tava pravritim. Tell me, what is your pravritim? What's your purpose? What's this universal form about? One moment you were sitting here with me on the chariot, and we were discussing, you had this beautiful form as Krishna with a peacock feather, and suddenly your whole consciousness changed, and I never saw that side of you. It's suddenly fire came out of your mouth and you were eating, you became a non-vegetarian. You start eight warriors on a battlefield. I mean, it's quite surprising. It's much more dramatic than Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde. It's a complete transformation of character. So Arjuna was a little curious, but what happened to you? Agyakime ko bhavan ugarupo. This horrible feature of yours. Arjuna did not appreciate that form at first, although Sanjaya appreciated it. Arjuna at the time was so shocked to see his friend transform that he said it was ugarupo. Now, if God is before you in a universal form, you probably wouldn't want to criticize him. You never know what would happen. Big man, you go up to him and you start criticizing him. You don't know what your destiny is going to be. But anyhow, Arjuna was so shocked. He said, Akyaki me ko bhavan ugrupo namostu te deva rapasi. But then he really remembered and he offered his obeisances. Sorry. Vigyatamichami bhavantam adyam. I want to know, Vigyatamichami bhavantam adyam. What you're doing? Vyatamichami vantama nahi prajanami tava praviti. What's your actual purpose? I mean, did you do this? Is it Halloween or something? You want to scare me? Or what's going on? So, Krishna tells Arjuna something that every materialist should know. He says, Kalosmi lokoshe krit pravido. Time I am, the destroyer of all the worlds. Kalos mi krit pravrito. Lokansa mahartami ha pravritam. That time I am the destroyer of the worlds, and I've come here to engage everyone. In other words, everyone who comes from the material world is under the influence of time. Whether we accept it or not, I mean, it's probably the most obvious thing that there's something called time. Under illusion, we kind of ignore it or deny it, almost like the ostrich that puts his head into the sand when an animal comes to attack it and just keeps on repeating the mantra, it's not there, it doesn't exist, I'm all right, I'm safe, I'm in the sand. And although this huge body is outside and the animal is going to jump on that huge body, but the animal is saying, the ostrich is saying, I'm safe, no problem. Similarly, every materialist has to believe that time doesn't exist, or they can reverse time. Or the scientists are just about to discover how to find the magic formula so that we'll all be immortal, even within the body. Although their most expertise is killing people quicker, that's really what they're working on. They're not really working to make sure we all live eternally. They want to make sure that we die as quickly as possible and get rid of us. We're called the useless eaters, feeders. What to speak of working? If they're working on eternality, they haven't done a very good job because they're also dying, all the scientists. In any case, kalos mi lokashe krit prarido lokansa mahartam iha prariduk ritepi tvam nabha vishanti sarave Ivastita pratnu keshiyoda. Except for you, the Pandavas, everyone here on all sides will be slain. So Krishna was predicting that practically all the warriors would be killed except for the Pandavas. But the Pandavas also don't stay in their self-same body, at least not in that particular leela, perpetually either. In other words, everyone has to change their body. There is no getting around it. And it's a struggle. As soon as we come in contact with time, we're struggling because we have no control over something. Therefore, as compared to being in an ocean, how much control does a little tiny person have in a big, big ocean? If you're thrown into an ocean, even if you're an expert swimmer, what can you do? Eventually you drown. Similarly, we're thrown into the ocean of material existence. the 1/10,000th the size of Tipperary size soul, with little knowledge, practically wrong understanding, and we're suffering, we have no way of getting out of the suffering. Although everyone's trying hard, but it ultimately proves to be a failure. So that's called, and what are we struggling with? The six senses, which include the mind. Whatever we accept or reject that the mind offers to us ultimately manifests itself as some kind of material result, some kind of material experience, some kind of material body, and all the material bodies are all losers. Some bigger losers and some other losers. In other words, if you have a big bag and you have different lottery tickets and you pay a lot of money, you can draw, but if all the lottery tickets are the losers, the losing lottery tickets, it doesn't matter which one you pick out, you're going to lose. So this material world, whatever body we get, we're a loser, according to this verse. That simply is another type of struggling. Even, and we come to the 9th canto, the 8th canto, even Indra is struggling. He's trying to kill the demons and they're trying to kill him. Even Brahma's struggling. He was born, and after a great struggle trying to figure out what was going on, Krishna revealed himself to him, at least in some Brahma's life. But in some Brahma's life, we find that immediately a big wind came and tried to knock him off the lotus flower. If you think it's windy here sometimes, try the lotus flower. And he survived it. Somehow he hung on to the lotus flower. But then he did a creation, and he created some sons, and they tried to sexually molest him. They were all demons. So talk about, you know, problems in parenting, having good children. He was the first one to experience it. Then he created so many different living entities, Rudras, they try to devour the universe, etc., etc. It was quite a problem. Brahma has quite a problematic existence. And besides that, he only lives 311,040,000,000,000 years, so he's afraid of dying soon. So he's always in meditation, trying to get out of his responsibilities as much as possible, because life for him feels very short. He was listening to the Gandharvas singing, and when Kukumi and Revati came there, it was only a few minutes before the end of the concert. But in terms of our existence, it was millions and millions of years. So for us, what we experience as millions and millions of years, he only experiences is a few moments, a few minutes at most. And he feels his life is just a short. And he's making plans to go back to the spiritual world. And we're thinking our life is very long. At the end of my life, I'll make the plans, because I got so much time. So this is called a struggle. And what is that struggle? Sharira yadavapnoti yatschapyu kramatishraha krihi vaitani samyami vayor ganda ivashyat. The living entities carry their different conceptions of life, one body to another, just like the air carries aroma. Let's say, take one kind of body and again quit it to take another. In other words, our philosophy is meant to teach us that we're crazy. If we don't accept that we're crazy, then we haven't really understood our philosophy very well. Crazy, not in the sense that we're about to do something like a crazy person, but everything we do is more or less that of a crazy person. In other words, we're living in a hallucination, and we're imagining it's actually reality. So that's called crazy. If someone walks in here and claims that they're Julius Caesar and we should all bow down to him, probably most of us wouldn't bow down. Or if someone walked in and said he's Napoleon, then we wonder, you know, this person doesn't appear to be very sane. We call him crazy. So he's thinking himself to be something that he's not, and we're also thinking ourselves to be someone that we're not, namely this body. So he's crazy, and we're also crazy. But maybe he's a little bit more crazy than us, and maybe not. So this false identification with the body is because we have certain conceptions. Our conception of this body is because our consciousness is cloudy, because we don't see things properly. And because our consciousness is cloudy, therefore we act in different ways, and either our consciousness becomes a little less cloudy or more cloudy, but as long as we act according to the material concept, we're going to stay with a cloudy mind, more or less cloudy. And the result is we just get one body after another. And as long as we work in the material world and material concept of life, this bodily concept of life, we're sure to get another body, either less distressful or more distressful. And Shrotram Chakshu Sparshanam Cha Rasanam Granam Eva Cha Adishtayam Rakshanyam Vishyan Upasevate. And thus we receive a particular set of senses when we get another body in any species of life, a particular set of touch and smell and hearing and sight, all grouped around the mind, and therefore we become attracted to a particular set of sense objects. So we may think that this is some particular liking I have. I like this particular kind of food. But actually it's only because of the body we have and the mental condition of the body that causes us to get a body. So our mental conditioning causes us to like certain sense objects. Just like most of us, if someone gave us a cigarette to smoke, we wouldn't be overwhelmed with joy. Oh, finally I get a cigarette. We wouldn't think, wow, I always wanted a cigarette. Or alcohol. That most of us wouldn't probably like the taste of alcohol. I remember I only had alcohol, I think, once in my life. I didn't particularly like the taste of it. And so I wasn't particularly attracted to it. It tasted like something which was rotten, which is what it is. But people like it. They actually are attracted to it. And I think they have varieties of it, of things that are rotten. Fermented, I should say. So they get accustomed to it. And therefore it mentions here that the Yamadutas put the soul into different conditions so they get accustomed. Normally speaking, most human beings, if you serve them a plate of fresh, hot stool, they wouldn't think, wow, can I get seconds? No, they would be disgusted by it. But if you present it to a hog, then you'll see a big smile on his face and think, oh, thank you very much. How did you know it was my birthday? So how is it that the soul went from a human being to the body of a hog and now he's relishing stool as if it was sweet rice? So that takes some conditioning. In the same way that people get accustomed to smoking cigarettes and they can't live without smoking a cigarette. Even when sometimes someone tries to become a devotee and they're off in the woods somewhere smoking because they just can't give it up. They'd rather, as Prabhupada once told Shyamasunda, don't let this little thing stand between you and Krishna. But sometimes it does. Such an insignificant thing, tuchavat. So, for a cigarette smoker, cigarette is tuchavat. But for the conditioned soul, something attracts the conditioned soul, some kind of sense object, that will whether it's eating, sleeping, mating, defending in some category like that, that one just thinks that, why should I go back to Godhead? I can take shelter of this particular sense object. And ukramantam siddhim vapi bhunjana vagunanvita vimurananda pashanti pashanti jnana chakshusha. The foolish, they cannot understand how the living entity quits his body or what kind of body he enjoys under the spell of the modes of nature, but those whose eyes are trained with knowledge can see all this clearly. So the question is, do we actually see it? Do we actually see how we're going to quit this body? Or what kind of body we're actually enjoying under the spell of material nature? Can anyone say for definitely sure that their body is in the mode of goodness? Or even passion, or how much ignorance is, what the proportion is, it's so complex, the material energy. And unless we're self-realized, it's very difficult to understand what particular kind of body we even have. Someone thinks, because I know martial arts, they're from a kshatriya. No, I'm probably just a dangerous shudra. So people don't understand how the living entity quits his body. Matter of fact, if we told most people, you're going to quit your body soon, they'll think we're threatening them. They'd probably call the police and have us arrested just for telling them reality. Or what kind of body they enjoy under the spell of the modes of nature. If you tell someone they're a shudra, they'll become insulted because they think they are a shudra. Rather than in a shudra body. It's almost like you're on the street and you tell someone you're in a Volkswagen. They say, no, I'm not. I'm in a Rolls Royce, can't you see? No, it's a Volkswagen. It says Volkswagen right on there. No, it's a Rolls Royce. You're a demon. You don't appreciate me for what I really am. You only see the external. No, if there is... You're in a Volkswagen, sir. Or if someone is in a... So we have to be able to judge what particular body we have, what the modes of nature are. Then that's called knowledge. For the false ego, it may not be very appealing to find out that we're not on the highest level of self-realization when we're actually less than a shudra. But that's reality. Utkramantam sitim vapi bunjana navidamid... Bhujana Nabidamvid. Ukramantam sitim vapi, bhujana vagunanvida, vimuro nana pashanti, pashanti jnana chakshusha. So we're supposed to train our eyes with knowledge. Not just theoretical knowledge, but especially knowledge of how to perform devotional service so that we can concentrate our minds upon Krishna and become ecstatic and purify our heart. And when our heart, is purified, then our consciousness becomes clear. And when our consciousness is clear, we can see things as they actually are. Then we actually have knowledge. So the process of devotional service is essential to get knowledge, or else we remain in ignorance. No matter how much experiments we do, no matter how much we get PhDs and MDs or whatever else, we remain in ignorance. Therefore, yatanto yoginas chayanam pachantyatma vashtita yatanto yakritatmano naivam pachanti chetasaha. The endeavoring transcendentalist who is situated in self-realization can see all this clearly, but those whose eyes are not trained, although they may try, cannot see what's taking place. So we can understand that actually, due to the fact that people are sinful and engage in sinful activities, no matter how much they try by their so-called efforts for knowledge, that there is simply becoming more and more ignorant. They may try in so many different ways to obtain knowledge, but knowledge of how to kill people is not knowledge. Knowledge of how to increase one's eating, sleeping, mating, defending is not really knowledge, it's ignorance. But people are proud, which is another symptom of their ignorance and their being under the spell of the modes of nature. They're blind and they're being misled by blind leaders. And the result is there's going to be trouble. If you have read the newspapers lately, you'll find out there was some trouble and there's going to be more trouble. I was listening to a tape of Srila Prabhupada and he said, just when my mind was getting a little disturbed by how crazy the people or leaders are. And Prabhupada said, as soon as they turned it on, Prabhupada said, so what do you expect? In the material world, it's the place of trouble. You enter into a prison, you're going to expect everyone's going to be a nice person. Everything's going to go smoothly. It's made for trouble, the material world. So the material world is made for problems, and the very effort to try to increase their eating, sleeping, mating, and defending is just going to cause more and more problems. And if we become caught up in also trying to do the same thing they're doing, we're simply going to wind up in the same problems that they're going to wind up in. That's how the material nature works. So we should understand that our real problem is we're quitting bodies one after another. And why we're quitting them, if we gain knowledge of that and how to stop quitting our bodies and get our spiritual body back, that's really the solution to our problems. No one else may listen to us. Everyone may think we're crazy. You know, as we wave to them going back to Godhead, and they're going, you're a bunch of fools, you're crazy, goodbye. Good luck down there. I'll send you a postcard when I get back to the spiritual world. Yeah, you're crazy. Believe in God. So I'll stop there. Any questions? Comments? Yes. If you ask a question not related, does anyone have a question related to the lecture? Probably. Generally only answered questions in relation to the lecture.
If we include our nature and also our bodies, mind and senses in Krishna consciousness, does that spiritualize everything?
If we engage our body, mind and words in Krishna service, does it spiritualize everything? Yes, it spiritualizes everything. Tad buddhiyas tad atmanas tad nishtas tad purayanaha gacchanya puna avritim jnana nirduta kalmashaha. One is faith, mind, intelligence, refuge, and anything else. And tad buddhiyas, intelligence, tad atmanas, the soul, the self, tad nishta, the faith, tad purayana, and the refuge. They're all fixed in the Supreme. That one becomes fully cleansed of all misgivings through complete knowledge and thus proceeds straight on the path of self-realization. So everything becomes spiritualized when we engage things in Krishna service. It's like if we put an iron into the fire, it gets hotter and hotter and eventually becomes like fire, becomes hot like fire. So everything will become spiritualized in association with Krishna and his pure devotional service and his devotees.
Thank you.
Anything else? Yes. Well, here's a microphone.
I'm a bit worried about this being crazy so much in this, you know, like in material existence. How many layers it has, even as aspiring devotees?
It has one layer. False ego. It's very simple. I'm Krishna. I'm the servant of the servant of Krishna, and that's sanity. And I'm this something other than the servant of Krishna. Then it's craziness. So very simple. Just think ourselves to be the servant of the servant of Krishna. Find out what they want us to do and do it, and then we're sane. We're becoming sane again.
Thank you.
Okay. One more question, not related to the class. Okay. But it has to be related to Krishna consciousness. Okay.
We were speaking with devotees yesterday about diplomacy. Some devotees, they say within Sadhu Sangha there should be no diplomacy, always straightforward, because this is like upashaka anartha, diplomatic behavior, and you should be just straightforward and then depend on Krishna, whatever good or bad comes out of it.
Really?
Yeah, this is one point, but another point is that like, because we are not so surrendered, therefore we should be diplomatic first. And
well, I think we should read the books. Yeah, rather than speculate. Then we can find out what Krishna and the Acharyas say about these things, rather than just our speculations. Just like Ramananda Roy, he was softening Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's heart by diplomacy so that he would be able to meet with King Prataparudra. So Prabhupada said diplomacy can be utilized in Krishna's service. Otherwise, Sanatana Goswami was studying Bhagavatam, King Nawab, Hussein Shah came, they all stood up and said, "You're the king, you know, you're..." He offered him all respect. He didn't say, "You're a king, but you're a malecha, meat eater, demon, get out of my house." No, he was diplomatic about the whole thing. So devotees know when to use diplomacy. I mean, Prabhupada was, when he met with people, he preached to them appropriately. He even offered them sometimes some appreciation for what they were doing, although they were on the highest level of pure devotional service. In his personal dealings, he was quite gentlemanly.
What is then the meaning of this kutinati? Like, I understand outreach. Like, for example, if I'm diplomatic, I distribute the book. If I'm not, I don't distribute the book.
Yeah, right.
This kind of thing. But with this sadhu sangha within, when you expect certain truthfulness and so on.
Truthfulness, what is our version of truthfulness? Yeah.
So what is the meaning of this kutinati, this upashaka?
Well, that takes some intelligence.
I don't have.
It's according to time, place, and circumstance. You have to see. Our goal is to give people Krishna. That's Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's order to us. How we give them Krishna, that depends upon what people can accept. It's offensive to preach to the unfaithful. So even in the Bhagavad Gita, Prabhupada says that in our most famous, probably one of the most famous verses in the Bhagavad Gita, one must be able to pass the test of the spiritual master. And when he sees the genuine desire of the disciple, he automatically blesses the disciple with genuine spiritual understanding. So you don't tell everyone, you know, everything. You have to judge according to the person what his capacity to understand is. So Prabhupada was expert at that. Just look at Prabhupada's conversations and how he related to people. And you can see how, you know, Prabhupada often, he would sometimes be very straightforward. And many times he was completely, people had no idea what he was, you know, what he was saying. He probably was quite indirect sometimes. Because he understood the person wouldn't be able to understand the direct meeting. So he gave them something more indirect that they might be able to appreciate and understand. He wasn't trying to be diplomacy. Is, I want to gain something from you, therefore I mislead you in order to gain something. But if you have no capacity to understand and I tell you something direct and you become offended, then what is your gain or what is my gain? It's probably right in the quality of speech. I know some of our members of our society like to point out one of the qualities of speech, namely truthfulness. But that's not the only quality of speech that Krishna mentions in the Bhagavad Gita. Anuvega karam vakyam satvam priya hitam jayat swarya abhyasanam jaiva vangmana tapuchate. So here the quality of speech, Prabhupada says, includes truthfulness, but includes other qualities too. So it also includes priya, which is dear, pleasing, hitam, beneficial, and as well as satyam. It should be Vedic, and it should not agitate people's minds. Anuvega karam vakyam. Prabhupada writes in the purport, one should not speak in such a way as to agitate the minds of others. Of course, when a teacher speaks, he can speak the truth for the instructions of his students, but such a teacher should not speak to those who are not his students, who will agitate his mind, their minds. This penance as far as talking is concerned. So, I mean, if you think, well, I'm being truthful, you're a demon, you're a nonsense, you got the wrong philosophy, I know everything. So that's called pride, offensive. It's not truthful, because it's not really taking into account what the real truth is, that we're all Krishna's servants. That's the real truth. We're supposed to serve Krishna. And if we don't accept that, then it's not fully truthful. Or is another point in the Bhagavad Gita. In the Evam Gyatra Gitam Karma Purvam Apimukshabi Kuru Kaimava Tasma Twam Purvai Purva Dharam Kritam. Those who are already cleansed of all impurities may continue to act in the same Krishna consciousness, so others may follow their exemplary activities and thereby be benefited. Foolish persons and neophytes in Krishna consciousness often want to retire from activities without having knowledge of Krishna consciousness. Arjuna's desire to retire from activities on the battlefield was not approved by the Lord. One need only know how to act. To retire from the activities of Krishna consciousness and sit aloof making a show of Krishna consciousness is less important than actually engaging in the field of activities for the sake of Krishna. Arjuna is here advised to act in Krishna consciousness following the footsteps of the Lord's previous disciples, such as the sun god Vibhishan. So we have to follow in the footsteps. We have to see from the example of our previous acharyas how they did things, and that's truthfulness. That includes truthfulness in it. Then our activities become actually truthful. Otherwise, we're just inventing our own truth. Anything else? Thank you very much. Krantaraj Shrimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Gaur Premanande.